All right, let's dive into a case today that's practically legendary. In the legal world, at least. It's Humphrey's executor v. United States. Okay, imagine a president being told, nope, you can't fire this person, even though you appointed them.
Wow.
That's exactly what happened in this Supreme Court showdown, and it's wild. It still shapes how we think about the balance of power,
Right.
especially when it comes to the president and those independent agencies we hear about all the time.
Yeah, it's really a classic case of independence versus accountability,
Right.
a tension that, runs through so much of administrative law.
Exactly. And it all starts with this guy named William E. Humphrey.
Okay.
Now, this wasn't just some, random bureaucrat.
Right.
Humphrey was appointed to the Federal Trade Commission, not once, but twice,
Yeah.
by presidents from different parties.
Oh, wow.
We're talking Coolidge and Hoover.
Yeah.
Talk about bipartisan support.
Yeah, bipartisan until it wasn't, right?
Yeah.
Because then comes 1933.
And FDR takes office
Yep.
with this ambitious New Deal agenda.
Right. Big changes.
He wants people on board who are fully in line with his vision.
Yeah.
So he asks Humphrey to resign.
And this is where things get really interesting. Humphrey refuses.
What?
Yeah, and not because of like some scandal or wrongdoing, but simply because he just disagreed with Roosevelt's policies.
Oh, wow.
So that bold move sparked this huge legal battle that went all the way up to the Supreme Court.
So to the Supreme Court, to decide the ultimate question, can a president just fire someone from
Exactly.
an independent agency just because they disagree with them? I
Yes.
mean, that's a huge question.
Yeah, the question before the court was massive. Can
Yep.
the president just fire someone from an independent agency just because they disagree with them?
It is. It's a really big question.
Yeah.
And to grasp like the complexity of it,
Okay.
we need to go back, rewind a little bit.
Okay. To an earlier case, Myers v. United States.
Yeah.
That one dealt with a purely executive officer,
Right.
the Postmaster General.
Yeah.
And the court there, they said that the president had really broad removal power. But Humphrey's executor, that was different.
Okay.
Because the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, it wasn't just carrying out the president's,
Right, they
orders.
had their own lane.
Yeah, they had it, Congress gave them very specific duties.
Right.
And they weren't supposed to be just like an extension of the president's will.
Right.
Right.
So how did the court navigate that tricky territory?
So this is where it gets really, really fascinating.
Okay.
Justice Sutherland, he was writing for the majority.
Right.
He delivered this legal opinion that people still study to this day.
Wow.
Yeah. And he tackled this issue like from three different angles.
Okay.
So first, he dug into the wording of the FTC Act, specifically like those fixed terms for commissioners and those very limited reasons for removal.
Right. It was very specific.
Yeah. And he pointed to this legal principle, expressio unius est exclusio alterius.
Oh, there it is. Latin. Gotta love it.
Right.
What does that even mean?
Basically, what it means is by specifically listing those reasons for removal,
Okay.
Congress was implying that any other reason was just like off limits.
Interesting. So they were drawing a line in the sand.
Yeah, they were.
Okay, so Congress intended to limit the president's power here,
Right.
could they actually do that
Yeah.
constitutionally? Especially when we're talking about these agencies that aren't just purely executive,
That's a great point.
Yeah.
And that's where Sutherland's second point comes in.
Okay.
He went beyond like just statutory interpretation, and
Yeah.
he looked at the bigger picture, the framework of the Constitution and the separation of powers.
Right. That's a big deal.
Yeah, it's huge. And he argued that, the FTC, it wasn't like the postmaster in that Myers case we talked about.
Okay.
The FTC had these quasi-legislative and quasi-judicial functions.
Quasi.
Yeah.
Those terms always trip me up. Can we maybe break those down, like in plain English?
Yeah,
Yeah,
totally.
good.
So imagine, right, the FTC, they're investigating a company
Okay.
for making false advertising claims.
Right.
They're holding hearings, gathering evidence,
Yep.
maybe issuing an order to stop those misleading ads.
Okay.
So that's their quasi-judicial function. They're kind of acting like a specialized court in a way.
So they're not just taking orders
No.
from the president. They're making judgments based on their own investigations and the
Exactly.
law.
Yeah.
Okay, and what about quasi-legislative?
Yeah.
Does that mean they're like writing laws?
Not quite writing laws, but they do things that like aid the legislative process. So
Okay.
for example, they might conduct studies on market competition
All right.
and issue reports to Congress,
Yeah,
right? And
right.
this helps inform lawmakers as they're considering new legislation.
Ah, so they're providing like expertise and insights to
Yeah,
Congress.
exactly.
Okay, that makes sense. So Sutherland's saying because of these unique functions,
Right.
the FTC isn't just an arm of the executive branch. It's got like a degree of independence built in.
Exactly. And this leads to his third and maybe most compelling point,
Okay.
the policy rationale behind limiting presidential removal power. So Sutherland argued that these independent agencies, they need some breathing room,
Okay.
some protection from political winds, you know, to actually do their jobs
Oh,
effectively.
right.
Right.
So they can call balls and strikes and
Exactly.
not worry about, upsetting the team owner.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like having referees in a game. You want them to make calls based on the rules. Yeah,
Exactly.
not on who's cheering the loudest from the sidelines.
Yeah. That's a great analogy. And Sutherland, he was really concerned about political pressure, you
Yeah.
know, influencing these crucial regulatory areas.
Right.
And he argued for, you know, protecting nonpartisan expertise, shielding these agencies from being like coerced by political agendas. It's about maintaining the integrity of that regulatory
Yeah,
process.
you can almost hear him saying, let the experts do their jobs without fear of getting fired for making an unpopular call.
Right, exactly.
But then it makes you wonder, though, right?
Yeah.
If a president can't remove commissioners easily, does that make these agencies too powerful?
Yeah, that's like the flip side of the independence coin, right?
Well,
You
yeah.
have the potential for overreach and the need for some kind of accountability.
Right.
But Sutherland, you know, he acknowledged this tension. He pointed out that Congress, as the branch that's, you know, closest to the people,
Right.
they have the authority to create these hybrid agencies and set limits on presidential power.
So it's kind of like this balancing act. Congress creates the agencies,
Yeah.
gives them these powers,
Yeah.
but also puts some checks in place.
Decks and balances.
Right. And then the courts, like in Humphrey's executor, they step in to interpret those boundaries.
Right.
But I'm guessing this one case didn't like settle the debate forever, though, did it?
No, not at all.
No.
Humphrey's executor, it became like a landmark ruling. It really paved the way for agencies like the Securities and Exchange Commission,
Well.
the National Labor Relations Board, and the Federal Communications Commission. All those entities, you know, they owe their existence in some way to the principles that were laid out in this case.
Wow, so this case from the 1930s,
Right.
it's still like echoing through how our government works today.
It really is. It's pretty remarkable.
It is remarkable. You mentioned earlier, though, that there's this constant like push and pull
Yeah.
between independence and accountability.
Right.
Have there been any other cases that have like tried to grapple with this balance?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Fast forward to like 2020,
Okay.
and we have Sela Law,
Okay.
which really tested the boundaries of Humphrey's executor. This one involved the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, or CFPB for
Took
short,
FPB.
which this agency was created after the 2008 financial crisis
Right.
to protect consumers from predatory lending practices.
Okay, so the CFPB sounds like another one of those like expert agencies trying to
Yeah,
operate independently.
exactly.
Okay. What was the conflict there? Did a president try to fire the director?
It wasn't about like a direct firing. It was about the structure of the agency itself.
Okay.
So the CFPB, unlike the FTC, which is a multi-member commission with its commissioners,
Right.
the CFPB was set up with a single director at the helm.
Interesting. So having one person in charge instead of a group
Right.
somehow changes the balance of power.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Yeah. The court in SELA law, they drew this distinction
okay.
between multi-member commissions like the FTC
okay.
and these single director agencies. And they argued that, you know, a single director
yeah.
wielding a lot of regulatory power without those checks and balances
yeah.
of fellow commissioners mm. could become too insulated from presidential oversight.
Okay. So even if the president couldn't just fire the director on a whim,
right.
they were concerned about having one person making those decisions
yeah.
without enough accountability to the executive branch.
Exactly. They emphasized the principle of the unitary executive.
Okay.
This idea that executive power should ultimately like flow from the president.
Right.
And that they need some control over how these agencies operate.
But wasn't that kind of going against the whole idea of independent agencies?
Yeah.
I mean, if the president has too much control, wouldn't that undermine, you know, the whole purpose of having these agencies in the first place?
That's exactly the crux of the debate.
Right.
And SELA law, it really ignited that debate.
Okay.
Critics argued that the ruling, you know, it kind of chipped away at the foundation of independent agencies
mm.
and potentially open the door for more politicized decision making.
So in their view, agencies like the CFPB,
right,
created to protect consumers, you know, from things like predatory loans,
yeah,
could become vulnerable to political pressure from the White House.
That was the concern. Yeah. They worried that these agencies wouldn't be able to like make those tough calls, you know, based on expertise, based on evidence.
Yeah.
If they were constantly looking over their shoulder, wondering if the president was going to, you know, step in.
That's a valid point.
Yep.
It seems like navigating this whole territory, it's like walking a tightrope, isn't it?
It is. It is.
Too much independence.
Sure.
And you risk agencies becoming unaccountable. Too much control.
Right.
And yeah. you risk them becoming just, you know, another arm of the White House.
Yeah.
Unable to fulfill their intended purpose.
Exactly. And that's why cases like Humphrey's executor and SELA law,
right.
they're so crucial. They force us to confront these really like fundamental questions
yeah.
about how power should be balanced in our government.
Yeah. They remind us that administrative law,
right.
it isn't just some dry, you know, technical field.
Yeah, no, it's not.
It's about wrestling with these big ideas.
It is.
That have real consequences. For how our country functions.
It does. It really does. So where does that leave us today?
Yeah, I mean, Humphrey's executor.
Right.
While still a landmark case.
Yeah. Yeah.
Has been, you know, kind of refined.
Yeah.
It maybe even narrowed in scope a little bit.
Right.
By decisions like SELA law.
Right.
So what's the takeaway here for our listeners?
Yeah, good question.
What should they keep in mind as they navigate this complex landscape?
I think the key takeaway is that the relationship
okay.
between the president and independent agencies, it's dynamic.
Okay.
It's not a settled issue.
Right.
You know, Congress creates these agencies.
Right.
But the president still has some oversight.
Okay.
And the courts are constantly being asked to like interpret these boundaries to figure out where the balance lies.
It's almost like a pendulum swinging back and forth.
Yeah.
Sometimes the court leans towards, you know, a stronger executive branch.
Right.
Emphasizing the need for presidential control.
Right.
And sometimes they lean towards more of like a robust vision of agency independence, prioritizing their ability to act without, you know, undue political pressure.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah.
And cases like Humphrey's executor and SELA law, they're two of the key forces that have shaped like the arc of that pendulum swing
mm-hmm.
over the years.
So it's not just about like legal precedent.
Yeah.
It's about these big ideas playing
yeah.
out in real time.
Right.
With real implications for how our government functions
yeah.
and ultimately how our lives are impacted by those decisions.
Exactly.
And speaking of foundational cases.
Okay.
There's another one that comes to mind.
Yeah.
That dealt with these like independent actors within the government. But in a very different context.
Okay.
Morrison v. Olson,
yeah.
This case involved the appointment of an independent counsel to investigate high-level officials.
Right.
And it sparked this whole other set of constitutional questions.
Yeah, Morrison v. Olson. It's a fascinating counterpoint to Humphrey's executor.
Okay.
While both cases, you know, they deal with questions about, you know, how much power the president has.
Right.
Morrison really digs into the complexities of investigations and potential prosecutions.
Okay.
Whereas Humphrey's executor, it focuses more on the power to remove someone from office.
So it's like two sides of the same coin.
Yes.
Both exploring those limits of presidential power, but in different contexts.
Right.
But before we jump into Morrison, right?
Okay.
I think it's worth taking a moment to kind of like recap.
Yeah.
The key takeaways from Humphrey's executor. It's easy to get lost, I think.
Yeah.
In the legal weeds.
Yeah.
But what are those core principles that our listeners should really like grasp?
Yeah, good point. At its heart,
yeah,
Humphrey's executor established that Congress has the power,
okay,
to create independent agencies.
Right.
And importantly, to limit the president's power to remove their leaders.
Okay.
Now, this doesn't mean that those leaders are like completely untouchable,
right?
But it does create a degree of insulation from political pressure.
Right. And that insulation is meant to ensure that these agencies can, you know, carry out their duties.
Right.
Often involving like complex technical issues.
Yeah.
Without fear of being fired, right, for making decisions that might be unpopular with the White House.
Exactly.
Right.
And this principle, while, you know, somewhat narrowed in scope,
right,
by cases like CELA law,
right,
it remains a cornerstone of administrative law.
So Congress can create these independent agencies.
Right.
But the courts ultimately decide how much independence they really have.
Right.
And that balance between independence and accountability, it's constantly being debated.
It is.
And refined as new cases arise.
Yeah, that's a great summary. And it sets the stage nicely for our discussion of Morrison v. Olson, which takes us even deeper,
yeah,
into this fascinating world of independent actors and,
yeah,
and their role within our system of government.
Okay, so let's jump into this Morrison v. Olson case. This one revolves around the Ethics in Government Act of 1978.
Right.
Which, if you recall, was passed after, you know, the whole Watergate scandal.
Right. A very different time.
It's all about accountability, and how to ensure that even, you know, the highest officials in the government,
right,
can be investigated.
Yeah.
For potential wrongdoing.
Exactly. Yeah. The act, it created this mechanism for appointing an independent counsel.
Okay.
It's a special prosecutor, basically,
yeah,
outside the usual Justice Department structure,
yeah,
to investigate and potentially prosecute high-level government officials.
Wow.
It was a pretty radical idea at the time,
yeah,
you know, to create a prosecutor who wasn't, like, beholden to the president,
so,
or the attorney general.
So you're telling me they created this, like, whole separate system,
yeah,
to investigate the very people,
mm-hmm,
who were in charge of the existing system.
Right.
That's bold.
It was a bold move.
Yeah.
And it was really driven by this desire,
okay,
to prevent even the appearance of a conflict of interest,
yeah,
especially after Watergate.
Right. So how did this play out in Morrison v. Olson?
Yeah.
Did someone actually challenge, like, the constitutionality,
yes,
of having this independent counsel?
They did. The case involved an independent counsel named Alexia Morrison.
Okay.
And she was appointed to investigate allegations of perjury and obstruction of justice against Ted Olson.
Okay.
Who was an assistant attorney general at the time.
Okay.
And Olson, you know, as you might imagine, he wasn't too thrilled,
right,
about being investigated by someone, you know, outside the usual chain of command.
Right.
And he argued that the independent counsel law, it was unconstitutional.
Okay. I can see why he challenged that.
Yeah.
So he's basically saying, hey, the president,
yeah,
is the head of the executive branch.
Right.
Right. And this independent counsel is kind of like stepping on their toes a little bit.
Yeah. Usurping that power.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That was his argument.
Okay.
He claimed it violated the principle of the unitary executive,
right,
similar to what we were talking about with CELA law.
Right, okay.
But in a 7-1 decision, the Supreme Court, they disagreed.
Wow, 7-1.
Yeah.
They must have had some pretty strong reasons for upholding the law.
Yeah.
Like, how did they justify having a prosecutor who was essentially, you know, outside the president's control?
So the key here was that while the independent counsel was appointed outside the usual process, right?
Okay.
They weren't like completely free floating.
Okay.
So the law, it allowed the attorney general to remove the independent counsel.
Okay.
But only for good cause.
Okay.
Things like misconduct or dereliction of duty.
Ah, so it wasn't like complete independence.
Right.
There's still a mechanism for some executive branch oversight.
Exactly, yeah.
But wouldn't that make the independent counsel vulnerable to political pressure? Like, what if the attorney general tried to remove them?
Right.
Just to protect, like, a friend in the administration or something.
Yeah, that was definitely a concern. And yeah. And critics of the independent counsel law, you know, they argued that it created this kind of awkward situation.
Yeah.
Where you had a prosecutor who's supposed to be independent.
Right.
But could still be fired by someone who might have, like, a vested interest in the outcome of the investigation.
So it sounds like, again, we're back to this classic case of trying to strike that balance between independence and accountability.
It is. It's a delicate balance.
And as we've seen, you know, finding that sweet spot.
Right.
It's not always easy.
It's a constant challenge in administrative law.
Yeah.
And Morrison v. Olson, it really highlights that tension. The court in this case, they decided that good cause removal provision.
Right.
It provided enough of a check on the independent counsel's power to make the law constitutional.
So it's a bit of a compromise, right?
It is, yeah.
Congress can create these independent roles to ensure, you know, impartial investigations.
Right.
But there still needs to be some kind of, like, tether to the executive branch.
Yeah, yeah.
To prevent them from becoming, you know, completely rogue.
Exactly.
And this back and forth.
Right.
Between independence and accountability.
Right.
It's a recurring theme.
It is.
Not just in these two cases, but in so many aspects of how our government operates.
Yeah, you see it everywhere.
It's fascinating how these, you know, seemingly technical legal battles.
Yeah.
Actually grapple with these, like, these big philosophical questions.
They do.
About power, accountability, how to make our democracy work, you know?
They really do. And cases like Humphrey's Executor and Morrison v. Olson, right, they remind us that the law isn't just about, like, rules and regulations.
Right.
It's about figuring out how to structure our government
in
a way that promotes both, you know, effectiveness and fairness.
So to bring this all back to our listeners, right?
Yeah.
Why should they care about these cases?
Right.
What's the takeaway message here?
I think the biggest takeaway is that our system of government is constantly evolving.
Okay.
These cases, they demonstrate that the balance of power between the branches, especially when it comes to these administrative agencies and these independent actors, it's always being negotiated.
And redefined.
Yeah.
And as we've seen, there's no, like, easy answer.
Right.
No perfect formula.
Yeah.
It's a dynamic process.
It is.
And understanding these, like, foundational cases, it gives us the tools to participate in that conversation.
Yeah.
To think critically about how our government works.
Right.
And to advocate for the kind of balance we believe is best for our democracy.
Well said. And for our listeners who are, you know, lawyers or law students, understanding these cases, it's crucial for navigating the complexities of administrative law.
Right.
It's a field that's increasingly relevant, you know, in our modern regulatory state.
It's not just about passing the bar exam, right?
Right.
It's about understanding how the law shapes the real world.
Yeah.
How it impacts, you know, people's lives.
Right.
And how we can use it.
Right.
To make a positive difference.
Absolutely.
Right.
Couldn't agree more. And on that note, I think we've reached the end of our deep dive.
Yeah, it has been a fascinating journey.
It has.
Exploring these two landmark cases.
Yeah.
Humphrey's Executor and Morrison v. Olson.
Right.
And uncovering, you know, this enduring tension between independence and accountability.
It's a classic tension.
That runs through so much of administrative law.
It really does.
We hope our listeners have gained some valuable insights along the way. And we encourage you to keep exploring these issues. You know? Keep asking questions.
Right.
Keep engaging with the law.
Right.
In a way that's both, you know, informed
and
passionate.
And until next time, keep diving deep.